Good morning, early birds. You've caught the worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio and our friends at Montana Public Radio, bringing you the latest news of the region. I'm Carl Lengel. It's Friday, the 19th of December, 2025. The Montana Attorney General's Office charged a state senator with official misconduct Thursday. State prosecutors say Republican Senator Jason Ellsworth of Hamilton overstepped his authority when he awarded a $170,000 state contract to a longtime friend and colleague. The charging documents say he abused his power and tried to cover it up by splitting the contract into two smaller invoices. The Montana State News Bureau first reported the contract. It sparked a Senate Ethics Committee investigation, a legislative audit, and an official censure of Ellsworth. He was stripped of committee assignments and floor access last April. Lawmakers then referred the case to the Attorney General. The misconduct charge carries a maximum $500 fine and a possible six-month jail sentence. Ellsworth did not immediately respond to requests for comment. National park supporters fear an amendment up for a possible U.S. Senate vote this week would allow the sell-off of national park land. Big Sky Connections' Laura Hatch has more.
National park supporters fear an amendment up for a possible U.S. Senate vote this week would allow the sell-off of national park land. If it passes, the legislation would remove language requiring the U.S. government to preserve national parks as federal lands. Utah Republican Senator Mike Lee is adding the amendment to the Interior Department Appropriations Bill. Michelle Ubaraga is the Yellowstone Senior Manager with the National Parks Conservation Association. She questions the last-minute timing right before the holidays.
This is one more threat and a clear indication that Senator Lee is not backing down, that he still intends to work to sell public lands and even potentially national park units.
Lee chairs the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee. He has said he believes the federal government owns too much land and mismanages it, especially in the western United States. He sponsored legislation over the summer that would have allowed the sale of public land, but the proposals failed after stiff opposition, including in Montana. Ubaraga says beyond the threat to the land, her Montana community in Yellowstone's Northern Gateway depends on tourism dollars from the park.
For every dollar that Congress invests in Yellowstone, that brings $15 back into our community. So many people, so many jobs in our small business community depend upon Yellowstone, not to mention all the federal employees who make up a critical part of our community.
Ubaraga and her colleagues are urging people to call Montana senators and ask them to vote against this amendment. A vote hasn't been scheduled yet, but Ubaraga says with 2 days left before the holiday recess, she anticipates a vote this week. I'm Laura Hatch, Big Sky Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Wolves could soon be removed from the endangered species list in the lower 48. Montana Public Radio's Ellis Julin has more.
The U.S. House of Representatives recently voted on House Resolution 845 to delist wolves. The vote was largely along party lines. Montana Representatives Ryan Zinke and Troy Downing voted in support of the legislation. This is the latest in a long-standing battle over the federal protections for wolves. Congress moved to delist the animals in the Northern Rockies, which includes Montana, in 2011. This summer, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service was court-ordered to reevaluate if wolves should be relisted in the West. Fish and Wildlife also attempted to delist wolves in 2020, but the move was struck down in the courts. Wolves are currently under federal protection in 44 states, but would be returned to state-level management under this bill. The bill also explicitly bans legal challenges. It now heads to the Senate. In Missoula, I'm Ellis Julin.
Crews are making progress in restoring power into customers affected by Wednesday's storm-related outages. According to a Northwestern Energy press release, service had been restored to over 35,000 customers by Thursday morning. The company says call volume to its service center on Wednesday alone was equivalent to a typical full month. Despite progress made in the storm's aftermath, thousands of Montana utility customers are still without power. Hurricane-force winds caused widespread damage across Flathead Electric Cooperative System, from Libby to Essex, south through the Swan Valley and Rollins, and north to Whitefish. As of Thursday afternoon, FEC had restored power to over 20,000 customers. However, over 10,000 customers were still without energy as another shot of cold, windy, and wet weather pushes into the Northern Rockies. Governor Greg Gianforte issued a disaster declaration on Thursday in response to an intense windstorm that impacted much of western Montana. Wind gusts as high as 90 miles per hour whipped across the state, resulting from an incoming cold front. The governor's office said in a news release that widespread damage to power lines, trees, vehicles, and buildings have impacted dozens of communities. Rovely, Wheatland, Mineral, and Flathead counties all enacted emergency declarations, as did the cities of Hamilton and Harlaton. The declaration means communities impacted by the storm can receive more state resources to clean up the debris and damage. People and businesses around Billings are assessing the damage from the windstorm that blew through on Wednesday. The National Weather Service reports the Billings Airport recorded 79-mile-an-hour winds and 76 miles an hour in Lockwood. Mount View Cemetery on Central Avenue in Billings has downed power and phone lines that staff say will be out indefinitely. Photos on Billings Park and Recreation Facebook page show lots of damage from multiple downed trees, which will be removed by staff in the coming days. Staff report the majority of downed trees avoided damaging headstones. Montana State University Billings crews removed and cleared several downed trees on campus, including a large tree that was blocking Normal Avenue on the west side of campus Wednesday night. Communications Director Dan Carter said the campus did not have a power outage. As of noon on Thursday, Northwestern Energy and Yellowstone Electric Co-op were reconnecting just under 500 customers who lost power. Unusually extreme wind gusted across Wyoming over the last couple of days, making driving riskier, Wyoming Public Radio's Caitlin Tan reports.
Wyoming is known for its wind, but 100-plus miles per hour?
That definitely still raises some eyebrows around here.
Jordan Young is with the Wyoming Department of Transportation. On Wednesday, WyDOT registered 144 miles per hour gusts around Smoot in southwest Wyoming, and 123 miles per hour on South Pass. Young says many roads were closed to high-profile vehicles.
Large, tall vehicles with not a lot of weight to them, especially vehicles like RVs, campers, toy haulers, other large boxy trailers.
She says at least 17 were blown over by winds just on Wednesday. Reports say the regional winds came from the recent Pacific Northwest storms. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Caitlin Tan.
The Billings Symphony is preparing its production of A Christmas Carol for this Saturday evening at the Alberta Bear. The symphony says Ebenezer Scrooge's journey of redemption is getting a makeover this season with help from narrator Dan Nickerson. The timeless traditional selections include Vaughan Williams' Fantasia on Greensleeves and Bizet's rousing Farandole. The performance ends with an audience sing-along of favorite carols. Matthew Glover is the symphony's director of artistic operations. He says that even though most of the performers are very acquainted with the score, rehearsals are critical to the production's success.
It's a new group, so they rehearse the week going in. We start on Thursday this week. And they'll have Thursday, Friday, they'll do a Saturday dress rehearsal, which is open, a ticketed open rehearsal, and we have the performance on Saturday night.
On a personal note, Glover gets to contribute artistically.
I'm getting to step on stage for 3 minutes during the Bizet. So for me, as much as the simplicity of the part is nice, for me, I'm just looking forward to getting back into where I came onto the stage as a performer.
The entire performance will last a little over an hour. Glover says that was important in putting the program together. The symphony wanted to make sure the kids have time to express their holiday excitement.
What fun is a holiday concert where you have to leave halfway through because, you know, kids get angsty and, you know, they just want to keep moving.
The concert takes place Saturday night, 7:30 at the Alberta Bear in Billings. I'm Carl Lengel. One of the biggest sporting events in Montana is this Saturday in Bozeman, and two police departments are combining forces to oversee event safety. YPR's Kay Erickson reports.
Bozeman and Missoula police departments are teaming up while their university's football teams are competing on the field. A news release Thursday from the city of Bozeman says Missoula Police Department will be sending patrol officers to support Bozeman Police to ensure public safety. The release says both cities will share in the cost of the extra officers. Missoula says their city will be fully staffed and capable of normal operations. Besides Missoula PD, other local and state law enforcement will provide staff as well to ensure it's a safe and fun weekend. There is a friendly wager between the Bozeman and Missoula police chiefs on the outcome of the Grizz and Bobcat game. The chief of the losing city will have to wear the other team's apparel during the next work week. In Billings, I'm Kay Erickson.
A Wyoming athlete is racing this weekend to qualify for the upcoming Olympics. Wyoming Public Radio's Hannah Haberman has more.
Zoe Mae Noble grew up on a cattle ranch in Cora. Now, she's hoping to compete in biathlon in the 2026 Winter Games.
You have to be a very fit and capable cross-country skier, and you have to be a very capable sharpshooter.
The 25-year-old grew up cross-country skiing in Wyoming, but didn't try biathlon until college in Alaska. She says a big part of the sport is accurately shooting with a really high heart rate.
You're at like 190 beats per minute, and it's freezing cold. You can't feel your fingers. Everything is happening all at once, and you have 30 seconds to try to hit five targets.
Noble is part of the National Guard biathlon team and will compete in three races in Vermont to try and go to Italy. She says she'll be going head-to-head with some seasoned veterans, but her goals are to
ski very strong and to hit all of my targets, which are things that I can control.
For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Hannah Haberman.
Hundreds of millions of dollars have flowed into Montana to improve internet access in rural communities. Montana Public Radio's Victoria Traxler reports on the state's progress toward closing the digital divide.
In the southeastern town of Belfry, 65-year-old resident Mary Boyer reflects on her relationship with technology.
I'm a green ledger girl. I can handwrite, you know, and I don't like calculators. I never owned a television. I have a crank Victrola for music.
Boyer's home is about an hour south of Billings. The Bear Tooth and Pryor Mountains flank Belfry as the Clark's Fork of the Yellowstone River meanders through it. She says technology has always been slow to come to their town.
We had a heck of a time getting songs because we have to do it over the internet for the karaoke machine. And all of a sudden, halfway through a song, there's no words or there's no karaoke whatsoever.
Boyer knows this connectivity goes beyond a karaoke machine. Before this year, she says their internet service couldn't meet the community's needs. But her neighbors rely on it for telehealth appointments, education, and commerce.
I think it's all about the community and keeping them in touch with the outside world.
Montana ranks among the lowest in the country when it comes to internet access. Broadband Now, an independent research organization, ranked Montana second to last in the nation for internet speeds and affordability. And rural places disproportionately lack access to high-speed connectivity compared to urban, and this is known as the digital divide. State officials and telecommunications companies have been trying to change that. Over the last few years, just shy of $1 billion federal dollars aimed at tackling this issue came into the state. The goal is to use it to close the digital divide for good. In the southern end of Belfry, Jay Velez stands in front of his restaurant, The Silvertip, admiring the scenery.
What a view, man. It doesn't suck here.
His restaurant serves as a local watering hole. It offers the karaoke night coveted by Boyer. And this summer, the Silvertip's internet got better.
We just rely on it for our point-of-sale systems, and so far it's been working great.
His improved internet results from newly installed fixed fiber optic lines. These are thick cables laid in the ground. They're considered the gold standard for broadband connectivity. But this technology is expensive to install, and it's been slow to reach towns like Belfry.
We're way behind in looking at the grander sphere of the problem.
That's Misty Ann Giles, the head of the state's broadband office, Connect Montana.
We are farther behind our sister states. Montana does have a lot of challenges when it comes to thinking about internet access.
Government-led efforts to close the digital divide have been underway for decades. The federal government established the Universal Service Fund in 1996, prescribing that all Americans should have access to basic connectivity. The fund subsidizes fiber installation and maintenance in remote areas. But it wasn't enough, so another project emerged in 2018. The U.S. Department of Agriculture's ReConnect program offers federal funds and loans to expand internet access. Giles helped stand up the program as former chief of staff at the agency's Rural Development Office.
A lot of the work we did when we were at USDA, when we first came into office, was trying to look at the bigger Rubik's Cube of why are rural communities lacking some core services when it comes to education, telehealth, things like that in their communities. And what it all came down to was connectivity.
This connectivity became even more imperative during the pandemic. Business, community, healthcare, and education all required a stable internet. So the federal government launched several new programs. Since 2019, around $900 million from four federal programs for rural broadband expansion has flowed into the state. This includes the USDA program and the recent Broadband Equity Access and Deployment Program known as BEAD. And it's through these efforts that Belfry's internet just got a little bit better. Nemont Communications executive Scott Paul drives through the 250-resident town on a sunny October afternoon.
Look for an orange-capped plastic pole.
He's pointing out their recent work.
And then between those plastic poles, there's fiber that's buried underground.
But installing fiber in Montana is expensive. It can cost up to $300,000 to reach a single home or business.
If you're trying to put all of this fiber into an area that's all rock, then it becomes a lot more expensive because rock's a lot harder to get through than the dirt.
For Belfry's project, Nemont received $10 million ReConnect dollars to build fiber for about 1,000 households in 500 square miles. That's an area the size of Los Angeles. Most companies rely on their customer base to cover the cost of installing internet infrastructure. But in low-population states like Montana, that model doesn't always work. Paul says that's why these funds are so important.
What the funding is allowing us to do, it's allowing us to escalate the speed of doing that. So we're doing a little bit more now than we have done in the past for that reason.
Dozens of companies like Nemont have leveraged these federal programs to try and reach more residents. Sometimes the costs still exceed what they can afford and they default. But some progress has been made. According to the Federal Communications Commission, Montana's broadband coverage increased 10% between 2023 and 2024. But there's more work to be done. 70,000 homes and businesses across Montana still need better internet. And rural residents, like Mary Boyer, know how necessary it is to be connected.
If we didn't have the access to the good communications, we could be in a world of horse pucky.
State officials hope to bridge the digital divide by the end of the decade. Reporting from Belfry, I'm Victoria Traxler.
That's The Worm for this Friday. Catch up with us next week. We'll have another episode for you. Early birds then.
The Worm is a production of Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Metal art call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.